Right. We'll wait till everyone leaves and then we'll go on. Let's see. Is everyone comfortable? Yes. Okay. Then we will go on to case number four, and that is appeal number 22, 1848, Angelique Snowden versus the Illinois Department of Human Services. Hello, Mr. Baker.
Good morning, Judge Roebner, Judge Flom, Judge St. Eve. May it please the court, my name is John Baker, and I am here asking the court to reverse a grant of summary judgment. The Due Process Clause provides certain rights to certain governmental employees before they can be terminated. The Loudermill decision by the Supreme Court establishes this. It requires that there be both a post-deprivation proceeding where they can challenge their termination, and that there also be some type of a pre-deprivation proceeding. Now, here, we never challenged the post-deprivation proceeding. We acknowledge that it was sufficient. Ms. Snowden had a right to a grievance, which is sufficient process for a post-deprivation proceeding. However, the mere fact that there is a right or there is a post-deprivation process doesn't ameliorate the need for the pre-deprivation process. Now, the pre-deprivation process doesn't need to be as elaborate as what it would be for a post-deprivation proceeding. However, there must be a process. And the thing about that process is it must be meaningful. And so that term has been subject to a lot of different debate, but one of the things that this court has recognized is that in order for it to be meaningful, there must have been an impartial decision maker who was making the decision. In this case, the district court granted summary judgment, finding that Mr. Corza, number one, was primarily that he was not the ultimate decision maker. We believe that on summary judgment that is wrong. We believe that a jury, looking at these facts, could adequately find, both that Mr. Corza was not impartial and that he, for all practical purposes, was the final decision maker.
Now, but would you agree that Mr. Corza lacked the authority to discharge Ms. Snowden?
Yes.
Well, then why does it matter that he conducted, the investigation or, recommended her discharge before the pre-disciplinary meeting in July? He doesn't have that authority.
Well, he doesn't have that ultimate authority, but from a practical perspective, he is the one who is making the decision. Under Illinois law, it ultimately goes to the Director of Central Management Services to approve the termination. There is one individual, the Director of Central Management Services, who determines every single disciplinary action over 30-day suspension for the entire state of Illinois. No one has said that CMS, there's no evidence anywhere to suggest that CMS engaged in any sort of a meaningful review. The rules make it very clear that the recommendation is to come from the agency. And in this case, that was Department of Human Services, and it was Mr. Corza who was to make that determination.
So are you arguing that because the recommendation has to come from the agency and then it is sent to the director, that every recommendation is rubber stamped and so they're not getting proper procedure?
I would agree with that, but I'm not saying
that's true. I'm asking you that as a question. Is your argument that because the recommendation comes from the agency, that that's always rubber stamped, and so therefore everybody who has been terminated by any agency that has to get final approval by the director has been rubber stamped and none of those individuals have received proper procedural due process?
Judge St. Eve, no, I'm not making that argument. I don't disagree that CMS does ultimately rubber stamp it, and that's the part of our argument that is important.
Well, you're saying you don't disagree. I'm not saying that. It's a question. It's not a, okay.
My
it's
argument,
not a statement.
My argument is not that CMS rubber stamps it. That's not part of my argument or our theory of our case here. What I am saying is CMS doesn't do an independent review. They get the documents, they get the recommendation. This is the director of CMS. And the problem we have is the practical realities is that you eviscerate what Loudermill means when you're talking about a very large state agency.
Why wouldn't it be sufficient for the director to sign off on or make the final decision that somebody should be terminated based on an investigation and facts that are presented to him?
That is, but the problem is the person who they are relying wholly on is the impartial person. So then Loudermill has no point. It serves no purpose because all you have to do is if you are a large state agency, you can have anybody sit in that chair and conduct the pre-disciplinary hearing, make a recommendation. It doesn't matter if they're impartial or not. And then you just have somebody up at the top who you have no idea, who has no idea what has happened down below, who says, well, I'm impartial. I didn't have any preconceived notions.
So what's your evidence that's in the record that supports your assertion that the director here just rubber stamped the decision of a biased decision maker?
There's no evidence that the director did anything. There's no evidence that the evidence is that there is no evidence. You know, this is summary judgment and what a jury could plausibly believe. They have offered absolutely no evidence that the director of CMS reviewed anything, that anything was presented to the director, that the director considered Snowden's statements. None of that. What we know is before the recommendation was ever made, CORSA called Labor Relations within Department of Human Services to ensure that if it went to a grievance, that CMS would ultimately stand behind them. And he got the response that yes, that they would stand behind that. So then he said, okay, well then I'm going to recommend the termination. So what we know based on that, or at least what a jury could conclude based on that, is that there was information beforehand that CORSA believed that this was going to stick. That's what he testified to.
But did you have the opportunity in discovery to depose the individuals who received CORSA's recommendation and Ms. Snowden's rebuttal and who made the discharge decision? Did you have that opportunity?
I don't believe that there was ever any evidence on who ultimately made the decision. And the director...
Mr. Corse's superiors were never asked about what they reviewed?
No, they were not. Ms. Wade was not discussed. There was no documentary evidence presented from her showing that she had reviewed it. She never signed an affidavit stating that she had reviewed it. There was nothing that was presented by Ms.
What I'm asking is, in discovery, didn't you have that opportunity to depose these people and learn what happened?
Judge Roebner, I believe, and I mean, theoretically, yes, we did have the opportunity. I don't recall. This was a long time ago that we did the discovery in this case. I don't recall why it was that certain people were or were not deposed. But I do believe, again, the question is based on the evidence that's in the record, and there is no evidence in the record that anybody looked at anything.
But you're asking us to draw an inference that the director of the CMS is the only one with authority to do this. The information was sent to the director of CMS. The director signed and made the determination that she was going to be terminated. You're now asking us to make an inference that that wasn't enough without any evidence in the record.
Well, I think that the evidence in the record is that from beforehand, CORSA was told CMS would agree and would support them when it ultimately went to a grievance. So I do think that there's evidence in the record to show that CORSA at least believed that CMS was on board with this beforehand, Judge Saini. So I do understand the points that are being raised,
But I think from a practical perspective, CMS is a huge state agency. The director of CMS has a multitude of responsibilities. And so by simply saying, okay, that we're going to allow the director of central management services to be the one who makes the ultimate decision, you're effectively eviscerating.
So that comes back to my earlier question. It sounds like you're arguing that it would never be sufficient.
No, I don't believe that, because it would require, in order for it not to be sufficient, it would require a fair decision maker. Most of the time, when there is a person in Corza's shoes, they are fair. Most of the, 99% of the time, they are fair. So no, I wouldn't argue that every time it's unfair. The idea is the person who is sitting there reviewing it, making the decision, from all practical purposes, making the recommendation, they have to be fair. And so that is what I'm arguing, that Corza himself was not fair in this situation. I see my time has expired, but that is our view. Thank you.
And I will give you a minute or two for rebuttal, of course. Hello, Ms. Gottlieb.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am Assistant Attorney General Anna Gottlieb for Defendants Appellees. Plaintiff challenges the process she received after an investigation revealed that she falsified records to the detriment of nearly 24 Social Security disability benefits recipients. This court should affirm summary judgment on the due process claim against Mr. Corza, which is the only claim pursued on appeal, for three reasons. First, no reasonable jury could find that plaintiff did not receive sufficient pre-deprivation process where she was presented with the charges on multiple occasions and given an opportunity to present a rebuttal. Second, the plaintiff also had post-deprivation process available to her through the grievance process and the collective bargaining agreement. She took full advantage of that process, further providing an additional safeguard. And as counsel just noted, this process was never challenged. The adequacy of that process was not challenged before the district court or here on appeal. And third, Mr. Corza is at a minimum entitled to qualified immunity to the extent there is a question about whether his conduct could have amounted to a due process violation. The law was not clearly established to show that an individual could not make a recommendation after an investigation, but before considering the rebuttal in a case, particularly where, like here, there was sufficient post-deprivation process and others were involved in the decision-making process. In response to the notion that Mr. Corza was a biased decision maker, there is no evidence of that in this record. Rather, there is evidence to the contrary. As an initial matter, the Supreme Court has noted that decision makers are presumed to act with integrity and honesty. The Supreme Court has also told us that to overcome that presumption, there needs to be a showing of pecuniary interest or some sort of personal bias. And this court has referred to actual prejudgment of a case. But in Wallace v. Tilley, this court has also set the bar for that standard to be very high by noting that an individual must have definitely made up their mind before considering a hearing or any kind of rebuttal. Mr. Corza's actions don't fit any of these. He testified that at the time of the pre-deprivation meeting, he had not made up his mind about the discipline because it, quote, depended on what was going to be in the rebuttal. There's no evidence contradicting the statement. And in fact, there's a summary of the pre-deprivation meeting that also notes that discipline was undetermined at that time. And separately, Mr. Corza was not the one ultimately responsible for the decision-making here. Rather, pursuant to statute, the Illinois Central Management Services is the only agency that could have made the decision to terminate. After consultation,
we know that Mr. Corza passed along Ms. Snowden's rebuttal along with his comment that it didn't change his mind. But does the record affirmatively reflect that one or more of his superiors reviewed the rebuttal, made an independent evaluation of the rebuttal?
We don't have evidence about who considered the rebuttal, but we do have evidence about the discussions that took place before After Mr. Corza made the initial determination, there's an email that reflects that the recommendation, which was sent to Quinetta Wade, was discussed with someone else in the IDHS Labor Bureau, and that was eventually discussed with CMS. As for the rebuttal itself, we don't have particular evidence who considered it after Mr. Corza passed it on, but he did testify that he did pass it on. And also, with regard to the rebuttal, there's nothing in the rebuttal that specifically addressed the charges made against Ms. Snowden. Rather, you know, there was just a notion that mistakes were made that don't really rebut the actual charges presented there.
Okay.
But to the extent there is any question about the pre-deprivation process here, there's two separate issues that also provide independent bases for affirming summary judgment. The first one, again, is the post-deprivation process that was never challenged. And this court in Wallace v. Tilley also noted that even if there is some existence of prejudice in the pre-deprivation phase, the existence of post-deprivation process can take away any of that prejudice. And this court has held in Winston and Butita that the grievance process set out by a collective bargaining agreement is sufficient to meet due process. And separately, as noted, to the extent there is any question about the conduct here, qualified immunity would also protect Mr. Corza, because there are no cases that specifically talk about, you know, providing a recommendation before a hearing or before a rebuttal is considered. And in fact, logically, that is just standard practice in many employment contexts, where an individual must make a determination about whether the charges would warrant a particular type of discipline if proven. The cases relied on by plaintiff for this point do not provide the law with sufficient particularity that would have put the defendants on notice that this was a due process violation. So for these reasons, if there are no further questions, we ask this court to affirm. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Gottlieb. Mr. Baker, you used your time, but we'll give you the 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Thank you for your indulgence, Judge Rovner. I do greatly appreciate it. I want to address a couple of points. Number one, this idea that there was that there's no evidence that Corza was not impartial. There's never going to be a case where there's more evidence. You know, here we have the CMS person, or excuse me, the labor relations person telling her, you schedule a pre-D meeting and lay it out with her, we'll give her the 5 days to rebut anything, and then we will put her on the suspension pending discharge. I mean, that's basically saying, hey, yeah, go ahead and have the hearing. We've already decided what we're going to do. That's what we're going to do. He then makes the recommendation, which is very clear that he is recommending termination. He knows that, so he knew that. This is not somebody who is impartial. He has made up his mind already. That's evidence. And again, we're talking about, could a jury look at that and make that conclusion based upon this evidence?
Mr. Baker, did you raise this argument in the district court?
I'm sorry, which argument?
Did you raise this argument about Corza?
Yes.
In the district court?
Yes.
So you didn't waive this?
The Corza argument?
Yeah.
No, there's a reference in their brief about waiver, I think, that talks about the fact that we didn't specifically cite to the CMS rule that talks. So I think that was their argument on waiver. But as far as addressing the Corza issue, that was addressed before the district court. So we have that. I want to talk a little bit, going at 20 seconds, the qualified immunity. This court has made it clear that the decision maker must be impartial. Corza knew that. Any reasonable decision maker would know that. I see that my time is expiring again. I thank the court for its indulgence, and we would ask that the court reverse and remand this matter for trial. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both Ms. Gottlieb and Mr. Baker. And case is taken under advisement.